Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, July 16th, 2018. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you here. And our remote man, our operative in the field, Dave Hamilton. How are you?
I am much higher than both of you today, and I mean that in an elevation sense. I am at about 8,100 feet here in Mammoth Lakes, California.
So. Oh, that is awesome. And I'm glad you gave me the clarification, because first, I do live in Boulder.
Right.
And second, when you live in Boulder, saying you're higher than everyone else can mean one of two things.
That's correct.
And only one of them relates to altitude.
That's right. Well, and I'm in California overlooking the Nevada border. So both of those things are also true here. So,
So Dave, it's really cool that you're taking time out of your vacation to join us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Really happy. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really cool. So let's talk some about the new MacBook Pro. And I know we've talked about the new MacBook Pro before, but we have new things we can talk about, because people have been able to get these in their hands and mess around with them. And I fix it as we're recording. They're in the middle of completely tearing one apart. So let's start with the first thing that they've talked about, which is the new keyboard. Apple says that they redesigned the keyboard for the 2018 Touch Bar MacBook Pro, and they're hyping how it's quieter. And TechCrunch did a recording, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. And sure, it does sound quieter. It sounds different, at least.
It sounds and feels different. I found one that I was able to play with at the Grove in Los Angeles over the weekend. And it definitely, yeah, I mean, it feels like a different keyboard, which is presumably a good thing given how many people did not like the original one. So,
yeah. And the different feel, the different sound totally makes sense, because when iFixit started yanking keys off of the one that they bought, they found that there's this silicone membrane that sits between the key plate that you actually push on and the butterfly mechanism that pushes the key back up after you push on it. So I'm sure that is playing a role in the sound. But Apple is saying that's not there as a way to help prevent the keyboard failures that people are experiencing, including me. I don't think it's any secret that my laptop needs to go back again for a new keyboard. And I use mine in closed lid mode almost all the time. So it's not like I'm sitting at my desk, Cookie Monster style, just munching everything and food's flying everywhere getting into this. It's just one of those things where I think the keys just are failing. But Apple's saying, no, we didn't do anything about that. All we wanted to do was address the sound, which sure sounds to me a lot like a company that decided they could fix the keys, call it a change in the sound, and push this out there and not admit to a problem with the previous generation keyboards while they're facing multiple lawsuits.
I like it. Yeah,
that's an attorney-driven messaging right there. And wisely so, right? Because there are pending lawsuits, right? There's litigation out there. So as soon as they admit that there's a problem, well, then they admit that there's a problem.
Right. And that just really doesn't play well for them in court.
You know, I bet this also explains why these new MacBook Pros were not announced at WWDC like they were last year. It could be that in March and April, when Apple started realizing there was a problem, they probably went in and inserted this into the production line process, and that probably slowed down the quality assurance and the testing just long enough to push it out of the range of WWDC, be a month later. That's my theory.
You know, I think that's a totally plausible theory. I think it's also plausible that when Tim Cook got on stage and said it's all about the software, that Apple was trying to stay very focused with their message at WWDC this year, and hardware wasn't part of it.
Yeah, I mean, they just waited a month. It, like, this easily could have been announced a month ago, right? Even if it were place your orders today, pre-orders today, shipping in July, right? As opposed to now where they're literally on the store shelves. So they definitely, like, the, everything about this was locked down, and they had final prototypes, if not more, a month ago. I don't think this was held from WWDC for production reasons. I think it was held for what you think, Jeff, where, or what you suggested, where they, you know, they had a lot to say about software, and that keynote went long. Yeah.
Yes, it was a long keynote, and the closest we came to hardware was when they introduced the new Rainbow Watch Band.
The Watch Band, yeah, which also looks great, by the way. But you said something interesting about them, a report, somebody checked with Apple, and they're not going to be replacing keyboards, right? With the keyboards in the older Touch Bar Max with the new keyboard, even if you send it in for replacement, Jeff?
Right. Yeah, that's what Apple's saying. So, so people like me that have a keyboard that needs to be replaced, we're not getting the 2018 keyboard. That's what Apple is saying. And so what I'm hoping is that while they were redoing this keyboard design for the new computer, they were coming up with a separate new design for the old computer. Because to me, it doesn't make sense to keep putting in keyboards that they know, even if they're not talking about it openly or publicly, that they know have a design flaw that's causing them to fail. I mean, why would you keep putting in a failing keyboard?
If you've admitted that it's a failed product, or if you admitted that there's a key design flaw, then that's one thing. But if you say that there's no problem all along, then you just keep on using the same old keyboard replacement units.
Man, yeah.
Oh, I didn't think about it from the legal perspective.
This is a slippery slope, right? Because there are some people that like the feel of the old keyboard. Now, the cookie crumb issue notwithstanding, but if you had to get your keyboard replaced and it was replaced with one that feels different and sounds different, that may be a negative, right? And you'd be like, wait, I just had my computer repaired and I paid you to repair it, or it was repaired under AppleCare and you changed it without my permission.
That's a good point.
I had my iMac serviced by them a few years ago, and they put the slower processor in because they had to replace the CPU. And this was a bad thing, obviously.
That would be a bad thing.
Yeah, and when I asked, they apologized, and, you know, it's an oversight, sir, and they got it and rushed the new one and all of the stuff that they should have done. They shouldn't have missed it in the first place, and we're not quite talking about them missing it in this case. We're talking about an intentional change, but a change that is noticeable to the user nonetheless. It's not like we put a different branded SSD in there or something where it's like, yeah, who cares? You know, like, fine, no problem. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're in a sticky scenario here. No pun intended with the keyboard.
All right, I have a scenario here where they could, and I know I'm stretching this a little bit, where they could do new keyboards for the 2016 and 17 models, and still be able to save some face. They could say, look, we're making just the 2018 model now. We have completely stopped production on the older model. So that means we don't have those keyboards anymore. And so we've changed our production system so that we're not making the old parts. And I know that would be a stretch because that's not what Apple typically does. But I can see that as a way to get new keyboards into these computers without coming right out and saying, hey, we had to change the keyboard. But that wouldn't address the issue that Dave brought up. What about the people that really like the keyboard they have? They just want one that has all the keys at work.
Yeah, I wonder about the consumer protection laws that require them to support devices for 5 years. Does that extend to something as minute as the keyboard? If somebody has got a keyboard they love and Apple says, we've stopped making that keyboard, you get the new one and you say, I hate the new one.
Well,
and then there's another lawsuit.
Well, there will always be another lawsuit. That's just how it works.
Right. I mean, I that's a fair point, right? Apple's a huge company. They create products for consumers. There are no shortage of attorneys waiting to either file individually or if opportunity knocks, as you know, lead of a class and make a ton of money. So it's just, yeah, I think Apple understands you can't avoid these lawsuits too. So, and that's fine. It's just how it is. Cost of doing business at that level.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I would be totally fine if Apple did redesign the keyboard for my computer. For me, the bigger thing would be not does it feel different, but do all the keys work reliably?
What I want to know is why, if these keyboards are so cool, with or without the membrane, depending on your preference, that Apple's still selling the Magic Keyboard with the scissor mechanism. Why is that?
Well,
we don't have that answer, John.
I went out and bought a Matias Pro keyboard because I needed a new keyboard. One of my old keyboards broke, and I had loaned one or given one permanently to my spouse. So I needed a new keyboard, and rather than buy another Apple aluminum keyboard, I bought this Matias backlit, which is glorious. And you know, I just can't imagine living without a backlit keyboard anymore. When I go over to the other keyboards on other Macs, they look like they're dead. They look like they died. They're just black, just laying there, black, lifeless. That's no funny. Green glow. It's an amazing experience. John, I'd love to have a butterfly keyboard from Apple. It's backlit. It would be glorious.
Yeah, well, we can live in hope. And John, I have to give you a hard time, but I'm doing this with love. The way you say Matias is just so cute.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matias? Matias.
Matias, yeah.
It's Matias.
Edgar prefers it that way.
I got into a bad habit years ago, and it's hard to break.
That's all Matias. Right. I will just give you a hard time about your Matias keyboards. There's some kind of special edition that no one else can get. Yeah. All right.
Matias.
Well, I want to branch out from the keyboard a little bit and talk about experiences people are having with the new MacBook Pro. And it seems like the reports that are out there right now, you know, people are noticing the performance improvement and are very pleased with that. But John, you found someone that reviewed the MacBook Pro from a scientific perspective. And I just thought that was fascinating. So what did they do and did they like it?
Yeah, this was Craig Hunter at NASA Langley in Virginia. And he reviewed the MacBook Pro from a technical perspective because he's involved in aerospace engineering, large simulation programs, boundary layer, computational fluid dynamics, airflow, aircraft flow and simulation of flow over a wireframe vertices oriented surface with computational fluid dynamics. And he's also familiar with LINPACK because NASA uses supercomputers a lot to design things. And so he did a surface mesh generation. He looked at an NACA airfoil performance chart. He looked at a LINPACK measurement. He looked at a shared memory benchmark using something called Intel MKL. I'm not familiar with that, but having been involved in supercomputers a lot in the past, I was I was pleased to see this kind of technical approach, because we complain about, you know, Apple being too consumer oriented and ignoring the technical and creative professionals. And Apple sent Craig one of these MacBook Pros with an eGPU, knowing his background. He's reviewed the iMac Pro and done a lot of these benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And this kind of benchmark and this kind of review is going to appeal to scientists, engineers, creative technical professionals who want to really dig in and see what kind of performance they can get with the kinds of CAD and other technical simulation programs that they use, as opposed to, you know, consumer oriented or non-technical benchmarks. So I was particularly enamored. I wrote about it in Friday's Particle Debris and just was glowing about this. So it's part of it, we overlook the things that Apple does to put these kinds of computers in the hands of technical professionals and have them write for technical professionals. And this is a classic example of that kind of review, and it got overlooked a little bit until a Mac Surfer picked it up on it later.
Now, one complaint that I have seen, and this is from people generally speaking that have not even touched this new computer, it's that, well, Apple's calling it a pro computer, but it's not really pro, and they list off whatever it is that they don't like spec-wise about the new computer. Like, well, it's only 6 cores. The maximum is only 32 gigs of RAM, and or it's too expensive, or whatever their issue is. Now, from a scientific standpoint, meaning using this in a scientific space, did he like it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let me address what you just said there. You know, for a long time, Apple was kind of taking some heat from technical professionals, and they were marching over to the Hewlett-Packard camp and the Z workstations and the Z notebook computers, which had 32 gig of RAM. Apple had recognized the problem and took effort to, you know, address the issue by putting a 6-core i9-8950HK in there and biting the bullet and using the regular power DDR4 instead of waiting for Cannon Lake, which has low power DDR and still support of high memory levels. So, you know, they went ahead and bit the bullet. I'd be interested to see if the benchmarks hold, because this is not low power memory. So it'll be interesting to see in time if users are still getting 10 hours out of it or whatever Apple claims. Mm-hmm. But they've taken this step in response to the criticism, and I think it's a good move forward, and it looks to be a very nice machine. And don't forget, it's BSD, FreeBSD Unix underneath. It's Darwin, and a lot of scientists still have great affection and great utility with the Unix underpinnings and the things that they can do with Unix on the machine. So this kind of gives technical professionals a chance to love a machine with a high-end i9 and 32 gig of RAM. So I think Apple's done the best they can do in the case design that they're using, the thinness that it has. So all told, with the design and the display and the case and the thickness and the Unix operating system and 32 gig of RAM and a fast i9, I think it's going to really appeal to a lot more people, kind of stem the flow. If there was a bad flow, it'll stem it. By flow, I mean departure from the Apple camp and moving over to Linux and notebooks and high performance.
Yeah, Apple can't answer this question for everyone, right? But
no, they can't.
But this is a huge step up from what they were able to offer, what they did offer in the past. I think this is fine. There will be people that will complain about this, and it wouldn't matter what Apple created. There would always be someone that would complain. And that's sort of the deal when you have, one manufacturer making the computers that work with that one operating system. If this is the OS you want, well, then you have to get computers from Apple. And that's a good thing in many, many ways. And mm-hmm. then there's this way, which means there can't be some, you know, smaller boutique company building these crazy fast, super spec'd out machines for the, you know, 0.1%, maybe 0.1%, right, that want them, because it doesn't make sense with Apple's overall product line. And that's just, I mean, it's part of the deal. It's part of what you buy into.
You gotta also think about the corporate mentality, Dave. I'm familiar with, because I used to support DOE and friends of mine supported NASA back when I was on the federal team. And when you have an organization that has bought, you know, say like 5,000 MacBook Pros, and they're heavily invested in the computer technology of Unix and Mac OS, and they have tools and technologies that are in place, it takes a lot to get them to just arbitrarily dump. You know, they can rattle their sabers and threaten, but when it really comes to a wholesale changeover, small companies, individuals and small businesses can make that change, but large institutional customers don't normally do it.
Yeah.
But they'll agitate for a change, and this is just the kind of crowd-pleasing change that will keep the big guys, you know, Department of Energy and NASA in the fold.
And I'm going to address all those small and solopreneurs, small business owners and solopreneurs that are shaking their fists at their car speakers right now, because it's not necessarily easy for them to change either. In fact, it could be seen percentage wise in terms of the difficulty of changing. It could be seen even more difficult for a small office or solopreneur to change platforms as well. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's easy for it's easy for anyone to change platforms. I never recommend people change platforms unless there is a hugely compelling reason to do so, because it will be a painful process, even if you don't have any customized software, even if all you're doing is, you know, email and web and all of that stuff, the change is still somewhat painful.
I'll hum a few bars into your car audio speakers and say my culpa.
There you go.
Perfect. Hum, 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 hum.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I had some complaints-ish when the new MacBook Pro was announced, and I've been reading up about more on this computer over the weekend and really thinking about it. And I've come to the conclusion that this is actually a pretty nice new machine. And if I was in the market for a new Mac today, I would gladly drop the money on one. And
yeah, man, that 13-inch looks really tempting.
I totally get it.
Oh, remember, though, that the 13-inch doesn't support... The 13-inch doesn't support the 32 gig. You have to go to the 15-inch to do that.
That's
although
correct.
The 13-inch gets a quad core for the first time, which is nice.
Right, but it doesn't have a dedicated video card.
Right.
So for me, if I were to buy a new MacBook Pro today, even though that 13-inch is really tempting, I would still go with the 15-inch because the dedicated video card is actually important to me.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, so we need to wrap up, and I don't want us running too long because, Dave, you need to get back to your vacation.
Thank you.
So, Dave, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. This was great. I really enjoyed it. And I'll post a view that I've had throughout the show from the deck at our place here where we stayed the night. So
awesome.
It makes it all worthwhile. Yeah.
So people can go to your Twitter account to see that?
Yeah, twitter.com/DaveHamilton or facebook.com/Hamilton.Dave, I think is me there. So there you go. Yep.
Cool. And having seen a photo of where you are, your view today is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
John, thank you for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I'm sure your view is great too, even though it's not as great as Dave's right now.
No, it's not.
No, but...
it's not.
We get by. And listeners, thank you for joining us. It's always great to have you here. Thanks for listening. We will see everyone again tomorrow.